You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Now, maybe you've thought about getting on this side of the microphone, perhaps hosting your own programme or maybe getting involved in production. Well, there are, of course, lots of opportunities to do that, not least of which here at RNIB Connect Radio. And the person in charge of RNIB Connect Radio, the head of radio at RNIB, is Yvonne Milne. And Yvonne joins me now. Welcome in, Yvonne. Thank you so much. I know you're a super busy lady, and I'm really glad that we got to do this. Let's just back up the truck slightly. Can you share the story of how RNIB Connect Radio got established in the first place?
Yes, of course, Dave. It's an absolute pleasure to be here as well and talk a little bit about the radio station. So the radio station started just over 20 years ago, and it was a meeting of a wonderful partnership, really, between RNIB and Glasgow City Council, which is we're based in Glasgow. Some people came together and thought, well, wouldn't it be a good idea to start a radio station, because radio makes complete sense for blind and partially sighted people to get information, because it's audio, and let's give it a go. Let's start with some volunteers and get broadcasting. So that's what happened, and it started off as a radio station called VIP On Air, which we know stands for visually impaired person, but also a very important person. So there was that kind of play on words. And it went along like that for a few years until they applied for an FM licence, which changed the kind of game plan entirely, because as you'll know, Dave, when you start getting an FM license, you become Ofcom regulated in the UK. And that means you actually need to start making sure that you do certain things, and you've got various regulatory things, requirements that you need to reach. So at that point, they employed someone who had a radio background, and some of the staff or the volunteers became staff and began to be paid. And from there, sort of the station began to develop and increase and become RNIB Connect Radio as we know it today.
And how would you describe the station's mission?
It's a really good question. I think it's quite simple in many ways, and we do so much, but the main thing is to centre the voices of blind and partially sighted people. I'm just going to say that again because someone just slammed the door. The main thing is to centre the voices of blind and partially sighted people. So to have people come on and talk about whatever they want to talk about. It might be their favourite hobby. It might be a challenge they're having. It might be just describing the journey they've had with sight loss. And it might just be what they aspire to do. Really what anyone wants to come on and talk to us about is grist for our mill. And the second thing I think we do is that we want to provide a whole range of information about the services available to blind and partially sighted people. We know anecdotally, because people tell us all the time, that, you know, if you suddenly lose your sight, knowing where to find information that will help you is incredibly difficult. So we want to be that kind of window onto not just what RNIB can provide, which obviously we do. You know, we're a big organisation. We provide a lot of different services, and we want to highlight those, but also what's happening around the UK and further in terms of services, maybe a grassroots organisation, other sight loss charities, individuals who have got some suggestions about what to do. We just want to get all of that information out there to a blind and partially sighted audience. So those are the two main things, but there's lots of other bits and pieces we do that kind of fit in under those particular mission statements.
And how did you, Yvonne, become head of radio at RNIB? How prepared were you to take on such an important role in this community?
That's a very good question. My background was in broadcasting, so I had been a radio presenter at other radio stations for about 7 or 8 years before I came to work at RNIB Connect Radio. I'd done some lecturing in radio, and I'd also worked for other charities in communication roles. So that was my background. In terms of coming to work for this particular radio station, I had so much to learn about the sight loss arena, you know, what it's like to live with sight loss. My mother had some sight loss as part of condition of multiple sclerosis, but I knew very little about some of the challenges that blind and partially sighted people face on a day-to-day basis. And I think I was probably like a lot of people who come to work for RNIB if you don't have sight loss. And I was very worried about getting it wrong. You know, I was very concerned about saying the wrong thing or offending somebody. But I'm so lucky to be working with so many brilliant people in the team here who, you know, still keep me right on things. I can still, you know, ask questions, and they're very generous with their time and knowledge. And so that has been immensely helpful to kind of get me to the stage where, you know, we can get this radio station out there and making sure that we're functioning as we should.
Let's talk about some of the challenges and opportunities then that are unique. What have you encountered managing a radio station staffed mostly by blind or low vision content producers?
I would have to say there's very little challenges from having a team of mainly blind or partially sighted people. It doesn't throw up many challenges at all, to be absolutely honest with you. Because, as well, you know, blind and partially sighted people just get on with whatever they need to get on with, like everybody else at work. I mean, we have the, you know, the similar, you know, issues that anyone has at work, where, you know, sometimes there are disagreements about a way forward, or, you know, trying to make sure that the funding that we have works as best as it can, and making sure that that funding continues. Yeah, so actually, in terms of, you know, does employing blind and partially sighted people in a radio scenario cause challenges? Absolutely not. In fact, for this radio station, it's imperative that we have that. I think the big challenge for the radio station is making sure that people know we're here. How to market a radio station which is, you know, UK-wide, and as you know, sort of goes further afield than that as well, to make sure that blind and partially sighted people know about us. If you're a local radio station in the UK, for example, the local radio station here is Clyde, they will put their presenters on the back of a bus and say, hey, listen in to this, and the bus will drive all around Glasgow and people will see that being advertised. And well, that costs a lot of money. And also, you know, we can't do that throughout the UK. And even if we did, can someone see that bus and get that messaging? So that's probably the biggest challenge. And, you know, a lot of that is, you know, talking to people and making sure that other organisations know about us. A lot of it's word of mouth. Some of the work we do, just talking to various different people in the course of what we're doing, helps to spread that knowledge. So that's probably the biggest challenge for us. But, you know, we get around it in various ways.
And what about opportunities then? I mean, are there any anecdotes, any times when actually having blind people there is an advantage? I know the station's interviewed some pretty high profile people over the years.
It definitely has. We don't aim necessarily just for the high profile people, because, as you know, we want to talk to sort of people about their lives, and that they're the stars of our radio station. But yeah, you know, we've spoken to sort of MPs and some film stars along the way, and we speak to a lot of authors actually around. You know, we've spoken to John le Carré, we've spoken to a whole heap of different amazing authors over the years, because we have book shows and we look at audiobooks and talking books for blind and partially sighted people. It absolutely only makes sense, this radio station, if we have staff who are blind and partially sighted. Unique opportunities. I just think the best opportunities are just giving people a shot to have a go at radio. I think we've had so many different brilliant chances to speak to so many different brilliant people across the years. Not everybody comes to us and ends up working on radio. Some people come and do a little bit of training and then go off and take some of that training to go on to do whatever they're going on to do next. And I think that's what, you know, the radio station is. You take out of it what you need, and you know, we don't expect you to not listen to other radio stations. We expect you to listen to Radio 2 and Radio 1 or Radio 4, whatever your poison is, and use us as a supplementary station to get the information that you need. So, you know, if you want a talking book, you can listen to the talking book. If that's not your bag, that's fine. So I think we've got this lovely, unique station that tries to be there for whatever piece of information you're looking for around sight loss. Yeah, I'm not sure I've answered that one very well, Dave.
That's all right. That's all right. I was just wondering whether sometimes actually having a blind person asking for an interview maybe opens a door or...
I'm with you. Yeah, I think it does. I think certainly there's an understanding of what we're trying to do is quite unique. And certainly for things like authors who want to talk about a book and we're saying to them, well, you know, the book's going into our RNIB library. Would you like to talk to, you know, some blind or partially sighted audience about your book and how they can access your book? People are always looking for new ways to, you know, reach audiences, sell things as well. You know, we've got a kind of audience which, you know, is they have money. They want to spend their money like anybody else. And, you know, we provide a platform to be able to talk to these people about how, you know, a particular service or, you know, something like a book can be marketed to that audience. So, yeah, definitely. I think we definitely have that.
And I know you've had, you know, people from reality TV shows on air. We've had content influencers. I remember Dolly Parton, actually, a few years ago.
We did get Dolly Parton. Yeah, she was doing an interview about the charity that she does around books. She provides books, doesn't she, around, I think it started in the States, but I think it's come to sort of UK and Europe as well, where children of a certain age get given a book. And, you know, she was talking to some blind or partially sighted children. We got a chance to sort of have a chat with her then. So yeah, it does. It opens up some amazing doors. And, you know, it's wonderful to be able to get that support from people with that kind of profile. Because it counts for so much. And again, it puts sight loss in the mainstream and some of the understandings that really the general public need to know to stop putting barriers up for blind and partially sighted people. It helps us get that kind of social change out there and that understanding out there when you've got someone like a Dolly Parton, you know, or a John le Carré or someone who's that kind of high profile.
So thinking about the workplace then, in terms of accessibility and inclusivity, are there particular technologies or other accommodations that you've implemented to support blind and partially sighted staff?
Do you know, that's a very good question. And when I started at RNIB Connect Radio, we did. We had desks that were slightly different in that they had audio controls. So if you put your microphone up, it would say in your ear, in your headphone, mic is live. And for various other faders, we had that kind of extra layer of accessibility. And it used to drive the presenters mad because they would say, I know the mic's live, I've just put the mic up. So actually, we have very little extra accessibility inbuilt. And it's quite a definite reason for that, in that we would like our staff to be able to go on and get jobs at, say, the BBC or ITV or one of the big commercial radio stations. And we're very aware when they go and do that, that there's likely not to be extra accessibility. So we want them just to be able to kind of hit the floor running and for that not to be a barrier to stop someone getting a job. So each of the presenters, I would say, Dave, gets around any of the challenges they might have with some of the kit in different ways. Most of my team work with a support worker. They use various things like obviously JAWS or Zoom text, general kind of office equipment for someone who's blind or partially sighted. And yeah, I mean, they each sort of, you know, maybe some of them use, some of the staff use a little recorder so that they can record notes or scripts onto that and listen to that in their ear. And I think that's the thing for each individual. There's a different way of doing it. And anyone that comes to us and says, look, could we adapt things slightly? We would always be open to that, of course. But we find we don't need it very often.
You mentioned that some people have gone on to other careers, and I'm keen to hear more about that. In what ways do you think Connect Radio contributes to breaking down barriers and stereotypes surrounding employment for people with disabilities, particularly within the media industry?
Yes, yeah, so I think we do it in a number of ways. So the main one is just from an on-air point of view. If you listen to the radio station, you're listening to blind and partially sighted people broadcasting, and the standard that the station is at is high. I mean, I would say that, but I do think it's a very high standard, and that there's a reason for that. There's no point us having a slightly amateur sounding radio station. And that's lovely that you've given the blind people a wee shot of the radio. You know, that we didn't want that kind of, oh, there, that's lovely that you've done that. The station more than holds its own on the dial when you compare it to other radio stations. The work that the team, including yourself, Dave, do for the station is at a very high quality, and it needs to be. And so the output is a shining beacon of all things that blind and partially sighted people can do. And I think from that point of view, I think it's a shining beacon of the ability that is out there that other people should be tapping into. On top of that, you know, some of our staff have gone on to brilliant careers, which is actually what we want. Although it's a pain for me when staff move on, that's actually what we want. We want staff to go on, have brilliant careers, whether in the mainstream or working on similar sort of services as ourselves. All of that helps to kind of, again, get people out into society so that, you know, everyone's seeing just what people are capable of. So we've had several of the team have gone to work for the BBC, one in London, several in Glasgow. We've also had a couple of the team have gone on to work for a Canadian-based radio and TV station doing a similar work as to what we're doing around highlighting content for blind and partially sighted people. So yeah, we've got you know, quite a bit of influence that way into sort of media. We also have fairly regular conversations with the BBC about ways we can work together a bit better. Maybe if they look to sort of pinch some of our staff, and you know, they often come to us if they're looking for, you know, someone to talk about an issue that's maybe come up in the news. We're often the first place that people stop and say, well, would you have anyone that could talk about this? So again, it gets people out into the mainstream.
I know one lady we spoke with has gone on to become a university lecturer. Yes. And another lady, I'm going to name drop Emma Tracy, who volunteered for Connect Radio, hosts the BBC's leading disability podcast now as well. So actually, a lot of people's path comes through Connect Radio at some point.
That's absolutely true. You know, we've been sometimes responsible for just giving people a little bit of the confidence they need to carry on and then go and shine. And we can't take their amazing careers all for our own. But yeah, I think it does. I think it just sometimes is a place where people come, get a bit of information, and then go off with maybe a couple of skills that they've learned. And mainly it's about confidence a lot of the time to go on and apply for other things. We also actually, Dave, get a lot of colleges coming to us saying, we've got our first radio student who's blind. We don't know what to do. We're a bit scared because we obviously want to give them the opportunity, but we don't know how to do it. And again, it's often just giving them the confidence to say, yes, of course, just, you know, ask your student what they need. It's entirely doable. Someone can do this course. And again, that opens up opportunities around, you know, the country for people to go, and for it not just to be us to be the ones training, but other, you know, mainstream organisations to be doing it as well. So
how do we measure the impact and effectiveness of RNIB Connect Radio within the blind community?
It's sometimes a bit tricky, actually. Radio is always a bit tricky to get figures for example, in terms of audience figures. We at RNIB have an insight department, so we do various surveys on a regular basis to find out kind of what people, do people know that we exist? If they are listening, what are they listening to? What do they like? What do they not like? We want all that information. So we know anecdotally from that we've got about 80,000 listeners a month. And also all of our content sits on a platform called Audioboom. And we know last year, for example, that content was downloaded over 245,000 times, which is pretty remarkable, really. So that's, you know, the audio sort of sitting again and living again not on the radio station, but on sort of, you know, as a digital listen again platform. And anecdotally, you know, I think it's fair to say when we get it wrong, Dave, people let us know. You know, which is what we want. You know, it's what we want. People will get in contact, and we hear from people, you know, what they want to talk about. I know Tech Talk, which you host, does have a lot of interaction with our audience, and we need that. You know, we're here for our audience. Without the audience, there's no point to us. So trying to you know, get that kind of feedback from people, it's just so important. And something I would like to do in the next year or so would be to try and maybe get a listening panel of our listeners that can sort of influence, come back to us, tell us what's working, what's not working, and contribute to sort of the development and the future of the station.
You're right, it's not just about numbers, it's about connections that people can't get elsewhere. Just talk about what happened during COVID.
Yeah, COVID, I mean, we went from, as everyone remember, it happened very quickly that we all got locked down. And at first, I think we thought, how on earth are we actually going to keep the radio station going, where we hadn't been working from home? We didn't necessarily have that tech in place. But the team is remarkable that I work with. I mean, we work with about 12 people on the team staff, and then at least another 20 volunteers. And the team just worked brilliantly with the wider RNIB team as well. And we were able to stay on air right the way throughout COVID. And it was so important because people were looking for information about things like how to go to your supermarket if you can't see very well, and there's all these one-way systems that are going in, and what kind of help is there, you know, to help you get around a supermarket but without touching anyone, and all those, that social distancing that became terribly difficult and ended up with some blind or partially sighted people being yelled at because they couldn't see whether they were socially distant. So just being able to talk about all those challenges, talk about some of the solutions, as well as provide some diversion. So we put on an extra talking book. We had some yoga in the morning. We developed a show called The Happy Hour because we were aware that none of us were feeling particularly happy. So ways to keep mentally well, physically well, when you can't see. You know, we developed all these different things during COVID, and the station, I think, really came into its own. And, you know, just being a voice and a friend at this really difficult and isolating time, it was a real privilege to be able to broadcast. It always is, but it felt through COVID, it really was a massive connection with our community.
Connect Radio's award-winning as well.
We are award-winning. Yeah, we've won New York Awards. We won what was once it was a Sony Award. It's now called an ARIA Award. And we've put in some... We've put in some applications for this year. So fingers crossed, Dave, that we maybe get a little bit of a mention in the next wee while. I mean, we don't do it for awards, but they're nice to have. And I think it's nice to show sort of other parts of radio what this community radio station can do. Because I do, as I say, I think we punch well above our weight for, you know, a fairly small radio station. That you know, we do provide a lot of content 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
What would you say to other media organisations seeking to improve their inclusivity and accessibility for audiences and employees with disabilities?
I would say, just do it. What's stopping you from employing, you know, people with a disability, people who are blind or partially sighted? I had a meeting recently with the BBC, and they said something to me which I really loved. And they said that they are taking an approach now at the BBC where instead of sort of employing people because they've got all the skills already and they've got all the background and the experience already, that they're going to actually employ people that they feel that there is, they can see the talent. The talent is there. They may not have everything that is required, but then you can train people up. I mean, I think that's what this radio station does. I mean, we take, I'm going to say take the words, take a flyer on people. We've done that recently with a couple of members of staff. They've come to us. They've come to us, and because they're, it's so difficult sometimes to get a job if you're blind or partially sighted, as well, you'll know, you know, people don't give you the benefit of the doubt, give you a shot. This radio station needs to be able to do that. And we could just see the talent in these people. And we just knew we'd be able to train them. You know, any job you ever do, you need to be trained up in, even if you've already got some experience. So just train people properly. And, you know, you will have some of the best staff ever. I mean, this team that I have, they are just brilliant. And they may start with very little knowledge of radio, but give it a few weeks and the desire to learn is there. We just end up with some of just the best people. And it really kind of annoys me that actually other organisations, whether they're media or just in general, you know, aren't tapping into some of this talent because it's such a waste. It's really such a waste. So what I would say is just be brave. Just bring some people in. Just give them a shot. I don't think you'll be disappointed at all.
And just before we wrap up, looking ahead, what are your aspirations and goals for the future of Connect Radio in terms of serving the blind community and promoting diversity and inclusion in the media landscape?
I think we want to continue to be a beacon of what's possible. I would like more people to listen. I'd like more people to know about us, to try us out, to feed us feedback, what you like, what you don't like about us. I want to continue to employ blind and partially sighted people to get some of those skills, Dave, that you can learn by stealth, you know, through radio. So even if we're not always giving everybody a job, because there's only so many jobs in radio, Dave. You know, there's not a gazillion jobs in radio, but the skills that you can learn by learning a bit of radio are immense. You know, you've got to be a good communicator. You've got to be able to use technology. You've got to have confidence, and you've got to have guts to kind of go and do a little bit of radio. So all of those things, I think we could all do with more. So by using radio as a means to train other people, get people involved, I really want us to do that. And just a little anecdote that always sticks with me, Dave, is we did a trainee course once, good lot of years ago now. And my staff member at the time said, oh, I've got this chap, he comes in, he's doing some training with me, but he just isn't very good. He just doesn't get it. And I don't know how to kind of really bring him in and get him doing what, you know, I think he could do. Anyway, it was a little 6-week course and that finished. And a few weeks after the course finished, my member of staff got an email from this chap and he said, I'm so sorry. I know I wasn't very good at that, but I really wanted to do radio and I'm so pleased I came along. But I had just become blind. I'd just been newly sort of diagnosed and I'd never been on a train before. And because I wanted to do your course, it made me get on a train for the first time. And now I'm traveling everywhere that I want to travel. So I sometimes think, you know, the learning that you get from doing something like radio, it's not necessarily so that you're going to be the next Sarah Cox or, you know, the next Radio 1 DJ. Maybe you will. Let's hope you are. But it's all about the various different ways it can help with confidence and learning and getting back out there. And I want the radio station to keep doing more and more of that.
Yvonne Milne, Head of Radio at RNIB. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.